Good morning. Fukan Zengi, Dogen's meditation instructions, he says to prepare ourselves for meditation for Zazen, we should cease all involvements and suspend all affairs. And what we find in preparing for Sesshin, you know, we all have to make some quite a bit of effort. We have to actually have quite a few involvements in order to cease the involvements. It takes some actual great effort to carve out this time where we might actually set aside our usual activities and focus on our ultimate concern. So I think in our Sesshin admonitions that Doralee read, it says something like, Sesshin is a time to realize and actualize our ultimate concern. So what is our ultimate concern? Well, conveniently, we actually write it on the door of most Zen places, or right by the door. We write it on the object called the han. And on the han that hangs out there, it says, great is the matter of life and death. This is our ultimate concern. Unfortunately, our han is somewhat deficient in the vital way of total emancipation because it leaves off some words that are usually found on a han. So maybe someday some great calligrapher will come along and put these words on the han, but that hasn't happened yet. But it should properly say, great is the matter of life and death. Time passes swiftly. O monks, don't waste this life. Sometimes it says, don't waste time. Don't waste time. So it's kind of a stern message, right? It is our ultimate concern, this great matter of life and death that is, formally in scripture it says, birth and death, birth and death. And by definition, we are time-bound beings. So this time passing swiftly is our situation. Our situation is that we are impermanent, as the Buddha taught, subject to disease, old age, and death. Our ultimate concern is that we know, every one of us knows, that ultimately we are not to be. No one in this room is exempt from that. People heard this, people in the West heard this message at first and they thought, oh, what fatalistic kind of religion this is, what kind of pessimistic religion this is, Buddhism. But what they didn't hear at first, but now we're starting to hear more clearly, is that the many teachings that the Buddha's have given us on how to face this situation that we're in, this untenable, unstable, impermanent life that we have. And the Buddhas and ancestors of this tradition give us many, many encouragements about how to face the situation that we have, that we are in. They also give us practices. And one of those practices is what we have already started doing this morning, sitting Zazen. The synonym for Zazen is the word samadhi, concentrated effort. Dogen says elsewhere, when we sit upright in samadhi, the whole phenomenal world turns into the Buddha seal. The whole phenomenal world of birth and death. The phenomenal world, that's the definition of a phenomenal world. It's a world of birth and death. And what Dogen, great Buddha Dogen, says is that when we sit upright in samadhi and face this ultimate concern of the phenomenal world, it's transformed. The phenomenal world is transformed and we're transformed. Our understanding of the phenomenal world is no longer fatalistic. Our understanding of ourselves is no longer fatalistic. When we sit upright in samadhi and study this fleeting, temporary appearance, we're given this practice. And Sesshin is a time to really, really devote ourselves. We have this really strong, you know, we've set up this schedule. We have a couple of days, not a long time, but it's there will be numerous periods of a Zazen. So we have a really a time to study ourselves. And of course, the many arisings that will occur as we go further toward ceasing all involvement and suspending all affairs. Because even though we may have arranged our life so we don't have to go to work or you know, take care of the many usual things that we take care of, nevertheless, we find when we sit down, you know, it's not so easy just to stop, right? Most people find that it's not so easy just to stop and say, okay, that's it. I'm suspended all involvement and ceased all affairs. Ah. No, actually, you know, your involvements and affairs will come to visit. You know, over and over again, you will see, you know, many arisings that will come. And they will try to assert themselves, you know, and they will try to distract you from staying with your ultimate concern. You're really, really staying with the situation that we're in. So we get kind of, you know, many, you know, what do they say? You can't see the forest for the trees. That's a common expression, right? So, you know, something about this practice is seeing the forest, seeing the total situation, seeing, you know, the one situation, but we get kind of blocked from seeing that our total situation by the many particularities. You know, our regular life is like, I was thinking, it's like task, do task, okay, done. Oh, what's next task? Do next task. Okay, what's next? Oh, do this, do that, do this, do that. So this kind of wears us out, kind of tires us out, and distracts us. So it's really wonderful if we have this time to you know, make a stab at being undistracted. Make a stab at being undistracted and just sitting. So there, there are many stories in the Zen tradition. There are many stories in Buddhism. Let's just stipulate this: there are many stories, and there are six practices that we have, and the first one of these. First one of these ethical practices that we have is the practice of giving, Dana Paramita. And there are many stories in the tradition about the practice of giving. And one of the stories from the ancient tradition, you know, maybe even before Buddha's time, was that there was a Buddha before the Buddha, before the, you know, Shakyamuni Buddha. There was a Buddha before that Buddha. And that Buddha, as an act of giving, he came upon some tiger and her cubs that were starving. And in order to save them, he sacrificed his body so the tigers would have something to eat. This is an example of Dana Paramita. And there's an example, there's another example of this in the Zen tradition. There's a story about a fellow named Ryokan. I don't know if we read this story in Spanish or not, Kenny. We might have read it in Spanish, but you'll tell me, maybe. But anyway, this story about Ryokan is that he was a hermit monk. He was a poet, and he was a hermit monk, and he lived alone at the foot of a mountain. And one day, a thief came to his hut and wanted to steal something, but Ryokan had nothing worth stealing. And the thief, but Ryokan did not want to have the thief go away empty-handed. he said, "You've come a long way to visit me. Let me give you a gift." And he took off his clothes and gave the thief his clothes. And the story goes that the thief then slunk away, no doubt in shame. And Ryokan sat naked alone in his hut and said, "Ah, poor fellow, I wish I could have given him the moon." He sat looking out his window and he saw the moon. And he said, "I wish I could have given him the moon." So the practice of Sesshin, the practice that we're going to be doing the next 2.5 days, is to let this kind thief come and take everything you have. That you will give everything that comes up. Just give it away, give it away. Constantly give it away. I wrote a poem in our transmission of the light class, and it said, "In this room, there are no pegs for coats, there are no racks for shoes, or pegs for coats and hats. In this room, there's some racks and." For shoes and pegs for coats and hats out there. But in this room, there are no pegs. There are no racks for shoes, no pegs for coats and hats. So this room is a place where there's nothing to hang your hat on. You just give away everything in this room. Whatever comes up, let it be given away immediately. Even your insights, you may have some insights. Don't get involved in those even. Give it away. Constantly give it away. What's going on there, Larry? I wish you would. I think it would be better if you would just sit. So it seems kind of crazy that the Buddha would, or a Buddha in a previous life, would sacrifice his body for the welfare of a tiger and her cubs. And it seems kind of crazy that Ryokan would give away his clothes and sit naked alone in his hut. It seems kind of mad. So what I would say is that this is kind of an unusual thing, unusual kind of crazy practice that we're doing. To give away everything. And it's the best practice in the world. It's the most satisfying practice that you can do. Whatever comes up, just keep giving it away over and over again. Don't cling to any thoughts. You know, your thoughts about your children, thoughts about your work, thoughts about your spouse, thoughts about your parents. You know, if the thoughts about people you're close to, thoughts about what you think is missing in your life, just keep the practice up of giving that away. Let this kind thief come and take all of that. Just let him take everything. So I'd like to suggest that we be kind of strict with ourselves during this session, that we not talk unnecessarily outside of the meeting. There will be some need to outside of this room, there will be some need to talk. The servers will need to talk some, and but to the greatest extent possible, keep the silence, and we'll be doing Orioki practice. And I know many of you have never done it, and I've heard many people did watch the video and have made diligent efforts to understand how to do it. What I've tried to do in the dining room is set it up so that there's one person who I think knows what they're doing next to other people who don't. So feel free to look at your neighbor and see what they're doing, and look, you know, you can look around, and you know, try if you're showing people, show by example, you know, show by just by the movement rather than talking too much. Really don't talk. I mean, just ultimately you just need to get three bowls out in front of you, you know, and you can eat. So it's not so terribly important that you get every step just right, and you won't. But you can look at your neighbor and watch what they're doing. It's not so easy to look at me because I have more bowls than I have a set of priest bowls, so it's just twice as many bowls as you have. So it's a little confusing to look at what I'm doing. But you can look at your neighbor and watch what they're doing. Barry, are you okay? Yeah? Once I was in a Dharma talk and the teacher said, "Look at me." And I thought it was kind of strong, but now since I've been giving Dharma talks, I kind of understand why he would say that. You know, when people don't look at you, you kind of think, "Well, I'm really not getting through. This is really boring." So it's nice when people look at me. I appreciate it. Let me say a few things about forms. Zen coughing and sneezing. Zen coughing and sneezing is like this. You see how muffled my voice is now? That's why we have these big sleeves for Zen coughing and sneezing. You don't have those, but still, this is the way to
cough or sneeze.
It's also the way to blow your nose if you have to blow your nose. You get your, I don't think I have a, I don't. But anyway, you can blow your nose in your sleeve quietly. So anyway, you can see the point. The point is to be quiet with everything we do. We should also be try to be quiet with our bowls when we're in the dining room. So when we're getting them out, they're nesting bowls. And so inevitably they're going to clack and clink against each other. But we can still make some mindful effort to take them out quietly and not bang around too much. I wanted to say about Kinhin. It's a little complicated to leave the Zendo at Kinhin, but what I would say is that when the clackers are hit, we should all pause. We can do this little shashu bow, and then we can pause for a minute, and those people who want to leave, need to leave to use the restroom during Kinhin, they can go out, and they don't have to step out over their zafus and zabatons. Outside, they can just go out this way and go out. I think it'd be better. So when the clackers are hit, just pause. If you're going to go out this way. And then once people have gone out, then we'll turn and start the walking circle. And then if you go out for Kinyin in that room, you can do Kinyin in the south lobby here, and people who are doing Kinyin out there should do the same pattern as in here, walk in a clockwise direction. And when you hear the clackers, come to the door, but don't open it. And then when you hear the bell for the next period of Zazen, open the door and come in. So this is more formal than we usually do, but Sesshin is a time for more formality and doing things a little bit more formal way. So when you hear the bell, is the time for the next period of Zazen. You're not late. Just wait for the bell, and then you'll hear it. And then, if the Doan doesn't hit it too soft, just Just come in then. Generally for walking meditation, the Eno gives instructions. I was fell back in an old habit at the beginning of the morning directing you, but generally the Eno will be giving any instructions relative to walking meditation. Also, if you need to step outside the schedule, I think as was said in the admonitions, if you decide, I need to take a period off, I need to go for a walk or whatever, please tell myself or Doralee that you're leaving the schedule. And similarly, if you have some problem that is really affecting your sitting and you want to talk to someone, either Doralee or myself. Tomorrow morning, I'll set out a list for a practice discussion, and people can sign up, and we'll do practice discussion tomorrow. But today, what I really would like is that we would just stay in the Zendo as much as possible, follow the schedule as completely as possible, and just really settle into our sitting. really settle into this time and have it be as silent as possible. You know, the Buddha, or the past Buddha, before he was Buddha, I think this was when he was a Bodhisattva, and he sacrificed his life for these tigers. You know, sesshin is kind of a sacrifice. We kind of make some sacrifice of, you know, our usual way of following our own desires, our own preferences. You know, in other words, there's a schedule to follow. So, you know, usually we don't have to such a schedule to follow. So if we feel like lying down, we go and lie down. If we feel like getting up, we feel like getting up. But here it's a little different. You know, we just follow the schedule, and we sit down with everybody, and we get up with everybody, and we walk with everybody. That's the spirit. So we're kind of making some sacrifice ourselves. We make some sacrifice of our own desires, our own, you know, we maybe even sacrifice our biorhythm to a certain extent, you know. But we make this sacrifice in the interest of our fundamental concern, our ultimate concern, which is our ultimate, well, I don't know what, but anyway, it's birth and it's death, and it's this untenable, unstable, temporary, impermanent situation that we live in, and we make the sacrifice so we can really study that, and we can when we study that in samadhi, that whole situation and our whole relationship to it is transformed. When we sit upright in samadhi, the whole phenomenal world of birth and death turns into the Buddha seal. And this entire sky, this is Dogen, you know, becomes enlightenment. Later on, he says, you know, all this does not appear within perception. So, you know, don't go looking for, you know, this entire sky turning into enlightenment, because it isn't within perception. But nevertheless, I strongly urge you to sit upright in samadhi, and I think you will receive because of your practice, you will receive a response from the universe. You will receive a response, and that response will, you know, bring great aid and comfort to you. Great aid and comfort. And help you immensely to face, you know, this ultimate concern, and not be, you know, not feel fatalistic at all about it. You know, that's the difference. You know, you stop feeling fatalistic about this untenable, unstable, impermanent situation. It becomes just right. You wouldn't wish for anything else. Everything is exactly the way it should be.